And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear. Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA beautiful studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. Now, let me tell you what we're going to do. Go to Freedoms with an S, PhoenixEzine.com. I really going to start pushing, probably in September. We're going to make a concentrated effort for the last 3-4 months of the year to push subscriptions to the e-zine. Because what we're going to do is we're creating all the... We have over a year's worth of covers, and we're on issue 17, I think. And they're just beautiful. And so we're going to be making a calendar as an incentive, and, you know, it's an ounce of silver to get your subscription. You do 2 ounces, and you get a Freedom's Phoenix... silver medallion, 1 ounce, and then we're going to be, you know, doing calendars and all this kind of stuff. We're going to push subscriptions towards the end of the year. And the reason is there's so much material that is so really, we have good issues. I mean, you know, good themes, good authors, good, I mean, and then you get all the back goodies too. So just go to Freedom's Phoenix e-zine, and you go into each one of the articles, I mean, the magazines there, and you can see the articles. Now, you got to subscribe to be able to read it or get it unless somebody gives you the PDF downloaded smartphone tablet version, which we encourage. You know, that's like marketing as far as I'm concerned. But the thing is that I'm telling you, there's a future. There's something to come, and we've been getting ready for it because we knew there was going to be an... after party, after all the political parties had their parties and voting and all that, and, you know, whatever. Now, there's an after, and young people, you know, represent that. But, you know, are you still voting? Well, some people are. Some people are in the fight. Some people are using the political process to, you know, more than make points, you know, provide an opportunity. It's like, look, you know, I mean, look. And you're going to have to look because, you know, you are going to look because as you're getting thunked on the head, you're going to, hey, what the heck's thunking me on the head? All of a sudden, I wake up one morning and zombie apocalypse. What happened? Well, some people know what's happening. Now, today's show, what we're going to do, in the first hour, we have Tisha Cassada. Now, I know Tisha from, we interviewed her before when she first decided she was going to run. She's brought to my attention by Michael Badnarik. Now, Michael has gone to Colorado to, you know, make sure that, you know, she gets all the help that she can get. And I want to get caught up with Tisha and find out, you know, I already know from talking to her why, you know, Michael's so enamored with her and a lot of other people. And she's very exciting to talk to. And she represents the young. And we're going to go fix America. Okay. So we'll see how that's been going and what she has planned and how the campaign's shaping up. We'll do that here in just a little bit. Then in the next hour, we got Deborah Robinette. Deborah Robinette was an integral part of the Revolution March back in July 08. And I love the party. You know, I got my favorite shirt from there that says, you know, the Revolution logo at the top. And then in big letters, it says Special Agent Not in Charge, okay? I wanted to make that really clear. I said, man, you know, I'll help MC and all that kind of stuff, but I am so special agent not in charge. They always think the MC, like, you know, is in charge. I'm like, no, heck no. You know, we had a good time. Gary Franchi and I, you know, worked on that. We had a really good time with it. But they are doing the Paul Festival, and they changed it from Paul to Paul, an acronym, P.A.U.L. That stands for, people aware and understanding liberty or something like that. I mean, you know, it's just, it's, you know, we're starting to be a separate, the same thing with Daily Paul. It's happening, you know, P-A-U-L, peace, A-U, gold, L, love, peace, gold, love. And I tell you, I'm going, all right, cool. We're starting to, you know, and this, we knew this was going from the beginning. I knew this was going to happen. It's just a stage that you have to go through. You know, how do you tell a libertarian from an anarchist? You know, what's the difference? I don't know, about two or three election cycles. That's what the difference is. They get it. Well, you know, talk to Tisha. She's in an election cycle. See, I mean, we should have to go through before she gets the realization. But how many minds is she freeing? Well, that's one thing we're going to talk about in the third hour with Jeff Greenspan. Now, he is going to be talking about local and national GOP politics. Now, he was, when they needed someone to run Arizona, and then they went on to the whole Southwest region, the Paul campaign, of course, you know, they, you know, asked what interest I had, which was none. You know, I said, you know, that's Republican, right? It's like party stuff, right? No. I'm an activist guy. I have nothing to, yes, here's the laws on, you know, and this is what to look for and how, you know, but somebody wants to play inside that, not me. But I do know someone. You have to pay him. I mean, the boy's got skills, but, you know, I mean, you know, he's got skills. Jeff Greenspan. So he was involved in, you know, traveling the country, doing training. He Mr. GOP. But I think I know what he's going to be talking about. His main thing throughout the time, he goes, Ernie, they're not really serious about winning. You know, if they were really serious about winning, I mean, these are fundamental things. You do this. But it challenged the man, and is there was some kind of, you know, plan, something. I mean, I know he's going to share with us. There was something going on, you know, and I just didn't care because I'm like, you know, that's like voting, right? So in the next segments, we're going to, but before we get to the first break, let's go ahead and introduce Tisha Cassada. And I want to make sure that you take the next minute or so to introduce yourself and what office you're running for, why you're running, and, you know, how old are you? And we'll get into how it's going and everything first. But go ahead and introduce yourself, will you, please?
Well, thank you, Ernest, very much for the opportunity to be on your show, first of all. But, again, my name is Tisha Cassada, and I am running independent, or otherwise known as unaffiliated. I'm running without any political party in the 3rd Congressional District of Colorado. So that's for U.S. House. And I'm 30 years old. I am an entrepreneur and have been trying to grow my small business for several years now. I'm going on 7 years. I myself have felt the economic impacts and some of the things going on at a national level that trickled down to small counties and localities where a lot of my producers and clients are, and wanted to step up and try and do something to make a difference. I think our two biggest issues as a country, well, really it boils down to one biggest issue, and that's the constitutionality of the federal government. If we didn't have all the unconstitutional agencies that we have dictating policy to the American people, then we'd be a lot better off economically. But those are the two big things, the constitutionality of government, protecting the civil liberties of the American people, and figuring out what we're going to do, if not at a federal level, at a state and local level, to ensure prosperity and property rights for individuals living in each of our states in our country, in our constitutional republic.
Okay. Now, it's good rhetoric that I'm sure goes over well, and so we're going to find out how the campaign's going, but I'm wondering, when you have, you know, really strong advocates for liberty like yourself, you know, attractive women putting themselves out there and young and doing represent men, you just want to have, you know, cover girl, you know, for freedom. I'm like, yay, that cannot be bad. And it's good to have that. But I'm telling you, as time goes on, there's an awareness that starts to creep in the more you play this game, to where you understand, you know, it's not the way they told us in junior high and social studies. This thing is so... We're a third world dictatorship with a shiny tie. So we're going to see, and Michael is there to help, and he has experience on this. We're going to see where the campaign's going. How's your mind holding up? How's your faith?
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Well, I just found out we only got Tisha till the bottom of the hour, so we're going to cram it in. Let me tell you what the bottom line is. You guys want to support this political process. Anybody that thinks that there's a chance and we're going to be able to vote ourselves free and we got to have there's an opportunity. You got Michael Badnarik up there helping Tisha do this in Colorado. She's getting lots of press. You go to her website and let's go ahead and give that out. Casida, C-A-S-I-D-A 2012.com. Casida.com. Casida2012.com. C-A-S-I-D-A. Casida2012.com. Now, you go there, there's going to be, you know, she needs whatever candidate needs. More money. More money. More volunteers. More money. And volunteers. More money. And in Colorado, you know, it's nice weather. I mean, it's not hot like here. So, you know, it's a, you can touch stuff without, you know, burning your fingers off. So, go up there, do you got something left of the summer, maybe some help and doing you guys in Colorado and some kind of, you know, throw a little something over there. Because I'm telling you, where else do you have a congressional candidate that's running on a constitutional theme that doesn't, you know, have the party affiliation thing to be messing around with? And Michael Badnarik up there, make sure, you know, keep an eye on things. I mean, you know, where else is that? So this is where you can help. You want, you know, a little donation, a little volunteering, a little stuff. So we want to make sure we do that. There's social media that you can do. Go to the site. Keep the buzz up. You know, have something, you know, to spread this message. But as you're doing your campaign, let's go ahead and talk about what kind of coverage have you gotten? How are they treating you? Have you been able to insert in the debate? Who's your incumbent opposition? And, you know, what do you think the impact is of your campaign? Go, Tisha.
All right, so I'm running against Republican incumbent Scott Tipton and Democrat Sal Pace. There's also a Libertarian candidate running, Greg Gilman, who I like very much and is a friend of mine, and I think he has a wonderful message, and I appreciate what he's doing as well. Our district is very unique. The number of unaffiliated or independent voters is almost equal to the number of Republicans and Democrats. Republicans have a slight edge. But really, it's almost a third, a third, a third. Combine that with a congressional approval rating that's almost in the single digits, and we have the opportunity to get people not only aware of what's going on, but empowered with the information necessary to protect their individual rights. And as I tell people, as a federal representative, there is nothing I can do to help you or protect you. All I can do is be a voice to tell the federal government no and let people know when it's time for a county sheriff or state representatives or the governor to step up to protect citizens of my state, to protect Coloradans. So that message has went very well, and we're winning people on both sides of the aisle because we're talking about there's a place for rules and regulations, but they really should be pushed down to a state and county level where there's more transparency and accountability for the representatives. It's easier to petition our grievances at a county courthouse or a state capitol than it is to hop in a jet and fly to Washington, D.C. As a matter of fact, if you go to D.C. now and protest, you could be considered a terrorist. So it's easier if we push a lot of functions down, and people on both sides of the aisle are willing to talk about that because for whatever cause they're championing, it would be easier for them to champion that at a county or state level. So, you know, we've traveled the district about 7 times now, and we've gotten wonderful reception. We've gotten some pretty good local press. We've also got a mention in the New York Times about our candidacy. And people, I think, are ready for something different, and I think they're ready for somebody with integrity. And I tell people, I don't know everything, and I'm going to admit when I don't know something or when I'm wrong, and I think people appreciate that. We have been invited to several debates. We've been invited to all of them except for one. It's been hosted by the Pueblo Chieftain, and that one we're still trying to get invited to. But we've been invited to the major one in the district, which is the Club 20 debate, which is a big deal. And we were also invited to the debate by Fort Lewis College and the League of Women Voters in Durango and one in Aspen, as well as several League of Women Voters candidate forums in several counties in our district. So we're participating in actually more than what my competitors are participating in. And that big debate, that Club 20 debate, is on September 8th. So that's coming right up.
All right. So here we have an update now. This is a question that I have. In doing this, are you getting the response from the people of just caring, thinking that elections are important? Are they coming? Who are the crowds that are coming to these functions and these speaking engagements? Are they engaged anymore? Do they care? What kind of response says, you know, what happened to the campaign as, you know, Rand Paul is endorsing Mitt Romney? What about this, you know, Paul Ryan thing? How is all, you know, just politics in general? Are people going next, you know, or are they, you know, they're engaged? You know, what's happening out in the road?
The majority of people that we interact with are engaged, and there's, of course, small factions of these people that have completely given up and are disenfranchised, but I've won some of them. As a matter of fact, I've won some people that have never voted before, and my candidacy has encouraged them to go register to vote and vote in this next election. There are people, as you know, that have completely given up on the process, and those are not necessarily our target audience. There's nothing I can do to change people's sentiment if they've completely given up. And I understand where people are coming from, and I don't judge people for feeling that way. I think there are a lot of different ways that we can get involved and participate. But for the majority of interactions that we've had so far, people are very encouraged by what I'm doing, and I'm not the only one in the country doing this. But, you know, in our district, people are very encouraged and excited. And I think a lot of people from the Ron Paul camp are excited that there's potentially another voice running to be in Congress to replace the voice of Dr. Paul, because I think that is going to be missed. And we need to continue, you know, having stalwarts of liberty and people that are willing to just tell the truth and face the facts and do what's right.
You know, there's my experience, and I've been, you know, around this for a while, since the late 80s, and I was you, okay? I mean, you know, I get it. And I'm seeing a greater awareness and ability of individuals to communicate with each other using social media. It's just what mechanism by which to express their desire, demand for being left alone. And one of the ways is having someone such as yourself out there representing that. And I'm wondering, when you go to these crowds and so on, you know, are there people, yeah, you just don't get it. Yeah, it's all about what I can get from Washington for me and gimme and kind of, you know, I mean, I can't imagine anybody that would openly be against you, but there has to be, you know, some blue hair out there pounding the table going, you don't get it and we need and got to have. I mean, you know, where's your opposition? Is it all support, or is there someone out there going, thinking you don't understand how government really works or something? Give us your opposition. What's the argument against your campaign?
Well, from actual people associated with the Democratic Party, I really have not seen any of that. I'm sure there is, but I can't speak to it because no one's outwardly said anything to me. I've gotten people that are Democrats to sign my petition to be on the ballot, and I've had people who are Democrats say, I don't agree with everything that you say, but I like the fact that you're standing up, and open their wallet and give me a donation. From the Republican side, the chair of the Republican Party has had some words, and you can find that on our website.
Oh, yeah. See, they see someone like her as a drain. You know, it's like the votes, those are our votes, and you're taking them. Well, it's not theirs. It's yours. And if you want your voice heard, you want this advocacy to continue, you want Tisha to be rewarded, go help her. Cassida2012.com.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
You know, I wish we had more time to talk with Tisha. I got to talk a little bit off the air and express my opinion. But, you know, this is, I see where this goes. You know, I already see where this goes. Ooh, I got my color back on my video. Yay, I figured it out. Okay, here, I got to show you this. All right, I'll explain that in a little bit. But here, you see this? This manual is like an inch thick, And it's, you know, big 8.5 by 11. It's all kind of, I'm going through this whole damn thing yesterday trying to figure out what button got pushed wrong. And it still didn't say I fixed it, but it was by accident because it didn't say exactly, you know, push this button, then do this. Do I couldn't find that part, but I stumbled across and figured and fixed my color video pretty now. Whatever, you're welcome. So, Tisha Cassidy, this is, I remember talking to her, and I mean, I heard all the rhetoric before. But she had sincerity. I bet she's like, yeah. You know, I believe this. This is, you know what? Don't you believe this? And that's why Michael's involved, because she took to heart a lot of the training that Michael does on the Constitution. They understand the argument behind and support of and why the document was, you know, Federalist versus Anti-Federalist Papers kind of thing. And let me... I tell you what my view of this is. That's why this show is Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. Or by yourself, you don't need me. The reason is the Declaration of Independence had absolutely nothing to do with the Constitution. Oh, I'm sorry, did I say that out loud? The Declaration of Independence is a beautiful document. It's like, look, there comes a time where, you know, you can't suffer. The purpose of government, defense of individual rights, counter to that. Right to alter or abolish. You'll suffer things as long as they're sufferable. And then you go, I break with thee. Here are all the reasons. And therefore, we must acquiesce in the necessity. I mean, that's it in a nutshell. And you forced it. You know, as individuals, we're just going, you know, no. And heck, now, with all the government that we got now and the tax rate and everything, we're like, can we have King George again? It wasn't that bad, you know. But it was because of the principle, the burning, I can do it myself. And the thing is that the government that we got in the Constitution was on the promise that they will stay out of your, you know, it's all for the common defense against they, them, those that won't leave us alone to allow the states, the United States of America, the states, that they would be able to, you know, represent their own people and left alone nonetheless and do whatever they want. Unless it was to secede. And we had that case, you know, as a precedent. It was called Grant versus Lee, you lose and you're ruled now. Grant wins. You know, the blue coats. So this is, you know, this has been going on. We that's why on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix, it's, you know, you go to the About Us, you know, and just, you know, right there, click About Us. Okay, this has been up there for 6-7 years. We recognize that freedom was taken from us the moment the ink was drying on the Constitution. Today's governmental structure is imploding under its own weight, and its death rattles aren't going to be pretty. At Freedom's Phoenix, we observe, comment, and try to stay out of the way. We know freedom will rise from the ashes, and we want to make sure that everyone's freedom is never signed away again by those who believe they have the power to do so. And then it goes on, but that's pretty much it. You know, Powell got that right. And I'm like, yes, and boss, you know, the Constitution. So someone that advocates for it like Tisha does, is she's behind the argument, the promise that was made, the argument for the Constitution. How it was explained in the Federalist Papers. Look, they had this provision here because of this. This would eliminate that. This would restrict what you call it. This is the chains down on any, you know, ne'er-do-well trying to, you know, take your goodies. Okay? So, it was the promise. Well, Patrick Henry is like, no. I smell a rat. I can see where this is going, man. There's no restriction on they can interpret it themselves to being and mean and whatever and so on. That's where the Bill of Rights came from, to stop another revolution and go, look, here's the Bill of Rights, all right? The 10 thou shalt nots of government. They shalt not. Well, how'd that work out? I probably slowed them down for a little bit. But what was the goal? The goal was to create the collective to begin with. And Alexander Hamilton made it really clear. I mean, of all the stuff that he said, this was it. He goes, look, if you don't have the ability to nationally tax and get revenue from everybody for a central collective, then how can you fund a sustained war? Well, hell, that's the best reason for not doing it. Seriously. How do you... you don't. Next. You know, I'm seriously? That's your argument? So it is. And that's just going to be, you know, it's like, oh. Barry was over. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this. We're going to do this next Friday. You know, I'll tell you what we're going to do. It'll be a fun video. You know, it'll be, you know, this is what we're going to do. We're going to have the camera kind of, you know, meandering around, you know, like this. You know, those of you that are on video, you know, it's just like, oh, we're, you know, it's up here. We're just kind of looking around, you know, we're going to, you know, whatever. Oh, yeah, I got to show you this. See all those buttons there? Those are the buttons that, you know, I had to figure out the combination of the video switcher. But anyway, so we'll have it off air, you know, I mean, off camera, kind of pointing around wherever. And I'm going, you know, the one thing that we're going to do is while that's doing that, you'll hear gurgle, 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 like it was a bong hit, right? And then we'll blow smoke out and, you know, in front of the camera lens, you know, and we're going to do that. Oh yeah, we're free today, radio, next Friday. Okay, so set that for next Friday. So, you know, Barry and I are just going to be like, we're chilling, it's up in smoke with Ernest Hancock or something like that. So yeah, but you never see anything, and you don't know if we're doing which, you know, green leafy substance may or may not. And the reason is that I know it'll get attention, you know, and people will have fun with it and so on, and we're like, wait, oh, Ernie, what do you think about that? I mean, you know, we'll play it up and we'll have some fun. And but we would never do it, actually. That would be bad. But the but man, we're gonna play it up. So it's the only time I've ever, you know, been recreated in any real way, you know, other than some Bob beer, it was at Pork Fest, and it was the last day, it was Friday, I was all stressed, and Alma was in the front row, and I'm going, Alma. You know, seriously, I was just, you know, Drew was late. There was all these problems, kind of, you know, on the last day. And I wanted to be, you know, you know, on the last day in love and so on. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 You know, you shouldn't have took the second toke. I mean, I could barely, hello. You want to know, it's a Friday at Pork Fest. You know, I should go listen to that show. You know, it's going to be, remember episode of Family Guy where they had, they're now, you know, singing on stage, and you know, it's all great music video and in their mind. But when you look at reality, you know, it's on there, you know, so anyway, it'll be entertaining. I should go listen to that. But I got emotional. I mean, I was introducing Catherine Bleich and John Bush, and they had their baby. And I, you know, was going, and I made the comparison. I go, hey, man, you know, what happens when Neo and Trinity get married and have a kid? You know, this is a battle on the front lines in Austin. They're doing like that. And I'm tearing up. I'm like, you know, I'm the clap, discuss, you know. So it was, you know, we'll just take a relaxing next Friday. And the reason I bring this up is because he was over night before last. And we're just swimming. He lives real close by, and just comes over, jump in the pool a little bit, and, you know, and goes home. But you know, we're just hanging out for a little bit, and we were talking, and it was just a lot of the conversation that we have and our understanding, realization of what's going on. You know, it's stuff that should be shared. And I go, you got to come on. We got to talk about this, you know, with the audience on air, and you know what's going on, because it's just pearls of wisdom. And it's an understanding that we've got, because he's run for governor 3 times. I mean, you know, you don't run for governor 3 times, getting all the debates, you know, go up there and, you know, slap around Jan Napolitano, get her all red-faced and everything, and not learn something. Now, what do you learn? What realizations do you have? What conclusions do you come to? What's the future? We'll talk about that a little bit next segment. Then we got Deborah Robinette from the Paul Festival in the second hour, and Jeff Greenspan in the third. National and local GOP politics. We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S.
phoenixezine.com.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. I'm so self-satisfied. I don't need you.
Yeah, I just want to break free. You know, it's a mind thing. You know, it doesn't matter if you're incarcerated or not, if you're freaking mind slave to the man anyway. You know, so, you know, that's the first thing. This, we talked about it a little bit, and now this last segment, I got time to read this. There's a discussion group that I belong to, economic discussion group, and it's a long story, but it's been around 30 years. And, you know, it's a lot of the, you know, influential doctors, lawyers, economists, stock, you know, guys with some money. And they sit around, and you got the Goldwater Institute and Cato funded guys and table buyers at dinners, De La Republican fundraising kind of. And one matter of fact, the guy that started the conversation was a person in Paradise Valley did the first fundraiser event for Dr. Paul in March of 07. When he came here, hey, man, we need a nice, purdy place to put up on a mountain and big kind of doing fundraiser. And, you know, Barry Goldwater Jr. comes up and says, you know, I lay hands on Ron Paul. He's a nice guy, and all the money flowed. So it was, so this gentleman, you know, an older gentleman, very influential in Republican politics. Well, they got on the bandwagon. Now, rarely, if ever, the only time they use the list of all the guys that go to this, only, you know, I don't know, 36 people. But what happens is whenever they use that list, you know, it's just to announce, you know, what the next thing is and discuss topics and what the forum's going to be about and so on. And it's each month. And but every now and then, you know, when the big money says, you know, I want to send out a something, here's the list. So here it comes. Paul Ryan, we got to get behind Romney and Ryan Romney because, you know, because there's Obama. And it's kind of, you know, I know it's kind of, but, you know, Romney and he read Ayn Rand. Well, then you start finding out how he's distancing himself from the objectivist and Ayn Rand. And, oh, no. They're atheists, and I can't have that, you know, because, you know, onward Christian soldier and whatever. So it just goes back and forth. Ouch, quit it. And they're looking for, and I'm just like, wow, man, you guys, they don't understand what's going on. So one of the things that, you know, I just do, you know, small little post. The first one, it was kind of larger one. And then the text. You know, I did it from my Gmail account, you know, through my regular email account and, you know, or to my list. And then the text that I wrote just got wiped out. And I'm going, the heck was that? You know, and then I wrote another one. I said, look, I replied to this thread, but the text of my reply vanished. Bottom line of the post, Generation Next knows it's all deception and distraction. They can't be counted on to support a government or a system that has stripped them of the future promised them. Screaming to be paid attention to, using fear and violence to get media coverage, and attempting to demonstrate some relevance to the most informed generation in human history, at least those that are, you know, are the most influential, has had little effect on those needed to fund this 30 to 50 year plan to what? Just saying. And the point was is that Ryan's, oh yeah, you know, at first it was 50 years, now it's down to 30. They're going to fix it. I'm like, wow, to even say that with a straight face, I'm just, are you freaking kidding me? One of the responses, you know, to a whole list that's going back and forth, and a lot more, you know, I only posted like 2-3 out of the whole, you know, thread that was near flame war that's going on. And what was amazing was how much support, you know, more the our position was. It's like, hey, man, I'm, you know, I'm done. You guys still voting? I mean, it's, you know, it's really, I would say, it's about half and half that even advocate even voting, you know, much less, you know, voting for, you know, mid. Okay. So it's really the culture shift. And this is the point that I was making. He goes, what this one gentleman did, bottom line, he was talking about his visit with a bunch of Columbia University students and that they don't see the people are amassing against anything other than Occupy Wall Street or something. You know, there's no amassing for freedom. And I'm going, where the hell have you guys been? What do you think the love illusion? I mean, it's like they only see what they want to see. They're looking for political power. They, you know, as like a physical thing. It's not a cultural thing. It's not a state of mind. It's somebody out banging some heads or got a gun or revolution out in the streets. That's what they see. They see blocks of voters they want to control. Where's all the amassing so that we can put a handle on them and make them go vote for, you know, Ryan and Romney? And I'm like, wow, man, you guys don't get it. I mean, there is no amassing, you know? So it's like one little personal focus group of mine is fairly meaningless, but please direct me where the simmering cauldron of Generation Next is amassing. See, that's what they want. Where's the massing? And I'm going, okay, all right, you guys are going to, you want to, all right, here it comes. All right, that's what I did. They are not amassing. This is a decentralized freed minds not on the street protesting youth that have seen the wizard behind the curtain are looking to just keep breathing longer than their oppressors as the dollar and the current paradigm collapses. And when the Columbia grads are underemployed with a personal and public debt that they are unable to pay off, they'll join the others that the system is turning out by the tens of thousands on a very regular basis. Higher education is losing its shine from my perspective. We each see different segments of society, and I'm sharing the perspective of many young that have been exposed to alternative education and have come away with a much different view of the world. The 13-year-olds just entering puberty in 2007 and exposed to the love illusion are now 18 and planning for the future. High school grads in 07 are now college grads with no job and an unpayable debt, and they share their opinions on the internet, and I pay attention. I can point to a lot of examples, but I'll summarize. They are more sad than they are mad. They have decades in front of them to make a new world based on values important to them. The past successes that older generations have had in implanting goals and desires into maturing generations has given way to the ability of an entire generation next, full of minds that for the first time in human history are able to create their own communities and gatherings of minds in real time around almost any catalyst for a way of life that makes them happy. The pursuit of happiness for the individual is much more independent of any collective influence now. Instead of how can I best fit in, it's more with whom do I best fit? And with a few mouse clicks, they are home. I have two boys and two girls. They graduated from Phoenix Christian Junior Senior High in 03, 05, 06, 07. All have attended various colleges and universities, but all combined have a total of less than $10,000 in student debt and are doing well financially in careers with a future. I now have four grandchildren that I get to enjoy and don't have to raise because we raised good parents for our grandchildren. I encourage them to seek higher education, but emphasize learning highly valued skills, ASAP, and going to school part-time. I contrast this with their privileged friends and their families that I got to know well over 6 years of private school activities with each kid and sports. The three-year-old hand-me-down BMWs and Hummers from parents are gone. Generations of once very prosperous families are now under one roof. University degrees have not translated into expected careers or plan for income, and a soft lifestyle didn't prepare them for harsh realities. Our children have come to respect our perspective and are happy to have benefited from the lessons learned with a 10-ounce bar of silver in their Christmas stocking instead of an iPod. They didn't appreciate it then, though. We valued capabilities and knowledge more than a piece of paper, and our children got a unique perspective on the political system and the lies that held it together. Their very close friends stay close to the internet and are closely kept up with, and many were very involved in the Levolution of the past 5 years. So, when I add my regular contact with the youth involved with the Ron Paul Revolution and the exposure to my children and their friends, and my friends and their children actually paying attention and asking lots of questions constantly, I suspect that my perspective is representative of a large swath of what is common. The future has nothing to do with the current paradigm, in my not-so-humble opinion. And as always, I have been planning for what will be the most inspirational to Generation Next. My efforts for 2013 are already planned for and has nothing to do with the political process. Culture will trump the coercion of the multi-layered-headed government beast, and I'm busy focusing on influencing individuals. I spent two decades detailing what is coming and why, and any evidence supporting these conclusions is ignored and are opposed when the status quo is challenged. But the damage coming is going to engulf supporters of the state the most, not because they are advocating for their turn wearing the ring of power, but because they don't understand the need for preparing for the elimination of the ring in the minds of Generation Next on a worldwide scale. Collective coercion in all its forms is being challenged head-on, and because there isn't an effective argument to support the enslavement of individuals, the debate has quickly devolved into arrest, rendition, and torture, and Generation Next know it. The shrugging is coming. It's here. It doesn't take an amassing. The only warning that you'll get is a shared opinion by the productive that they are not slaves. The struggling has already started, and those blind to it don't understand why the foundation of their paradigm is crumbling beneath them.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona. And we are talking to Deborah Robinette, who's going to be in Tampa, Florida. Where are you at? Are you in Southern California right now? Whoa, I'm sorry, I got to push the button. Okay, I'm sorry, where are you right now, Deborah?
Right outside of San Diego in California.
Okay, so we're not too far away. Hello. I'm really supportive of what you're doing. I mean, and the fact that I knew that you were involved in this, all of a sudden I knew, I'm going, you know what? Stuff is going to get done. Now, you can't make, you know, volunteers help. You can't make people do stuff. You can't make, so what happens, Deborah has to do it all. Okay. So this is, and we've been doing the Paul Festival dime cards. You know, we have a regular basis. You know, Don's been sending you guys money. You know, they're selling, they're going, people want them. And whatever we have left over, if any, you know, we only did 1,000. You know, they're $10 a piece so that people can donate. Don's got it up on the page now. It's on today's archive. You purchase that. It covers our cost at, you know, like $350 and $650 goes right to y'all. So you just go, you know, you want to support, you want to get a commemorative kind of whatever. Cool. There you go. Now, the thing is, though.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, too, for doing that.
Yeah. It's our pleasure. You know, it's a good memento. I mean, it's cool. And it's a nice design
really
you guys did, and it's, you know, it's cool. Now, the thing is, though, is, okay, now let's talk about the event. You know, I know that I loved working with you guys at the Revolution March. I have my favorite T-shirt, Special Agent Not in Charge. I like that part. And the but I just couldn't muster up enough, you know, to go help the GOP, you know, credibility of anything. I'm just so and I know.
Well, you turned out to be right about that.
I get no pleasure in saying, you know, whatever. But the point is that during this there's a picture of you. Man, you is a good-looking woman, Donna. That was a good picture. You know, I got a good picture of you up here. Wait. Let me get to it.
You?
Everybody, look at that. Look at that. Oh, Deborah, man, she's hot. Okay.
Oh, my God.
I was distracted. Now, this is you're doing this process, and the first thing, we got an hour, we can get to this, but we'll get to everything, what's going on, so on. But the main thing was that you were depending on the RNC for at least to not get in the way. At the very least, just kind of no better than to mess with the Paul people, you know, his supporters. Just leave them alone. But that didn't really turn out to be the case, did it?
No, it sure didn't.
Well, tell me everything.
Well, typically what happens when a convention comes to a town is that they go around and they contract with all the major venues so that they can pick and choose who they want first for the, you know, during the convention time for all the events. And then they do like a soft release, and then a couple months later they do a hard release and release everybody that they ended up not using. Well, last March, when we decided we wanted to have the event at the fairgrounds, we contacted the fairgrounds and they said yes, but we're under contract with the Committee on Arrangements, which is the RNC, and you need to apply with them first. So we did. You know, we followed the rules. We applied. And then the fairgrounds told us as soon as they give us the go-ahead to start negotiating with you, we'll give you a call. Well, about a month later, they called us and said, yes, we can, we've been given the go-ahead to negotiate with you. So about a month after that, after we had done all our negotiating, figured out how much of the fairgrounds we were going to need, what it was going to cost us, and all that kind of thing, we were ready to sign. And then so was the fairgrounds. It had already been in the papers and everything else. Everyone knew we were going to have it there and that we were working with them. Well, the Committee on Arrangements decides they're not going to release the fairgrounds to us. They won't give us a reason. They just tell us that they're putting us in line to, you know, to do this. And I told them, I said, well, you know, we applied for this back in March, and nobody else wants the fairgrounds, and I already know that because we've been talking to the fairgrounds. And they kept putting us off and wouldn't deal with us. So we knew at that point that something was wrong and that they figured out that we were, you know, Ron Paul supporters. And so we decided to get an attorney involved. We did an FOIA on the contract between the COA and the fairgrounds. And we launched a, you know, a public pressure campaign against them through Ron Paul Media, and the mainstream media picked up on it. And between all of that, and then the fairgrounds, of course, wanted us there. So they got some heavy hitters involved, too. And between all of that, we were able to, you know, finally get them to release the fairgrounds. But it was a hassle. It hurt us. Too much time went by, and we lost our window of opportunity to get some great national acts because their agents went ahead and booked because, you know, of the time that it took. And, you know, it hurt us. It hurt us when they did that. But we still managed. We still got it done.
Well, I tell you the one thing that, you know, the timing, that, you know, all of a sudden, no, we got to go. We can't wait. We got to go somewhere else. No, wait a minute. Wait, oh, you know what I see here? On my little 3x5 bullet point card from the RNC, it says Rand Paul endorsed Mitt. It's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm wondering about that, too.
So I'm like, you know, this is, I tell you what's going on here. I just was talking about it in the last segment, that they're here raging debate over, you know, oh, Paul Ryan, he's a libertarian. And I'm going,
yeah.
So it in the last sentence I wasn't able to get out, it's like, the shrugging has already started, and those blind to it don't understand why the foundation of their paradigm has crumbled beneath them. I can go on and on providing examples, or I can just wait for even the most obtuse minds to recognize the shift. It won't be long. What they were going on about is they wanted to know where the amassing of the revolution was. You know, where's all these, where are all this Generation Next, Ernie? Where are we want to put a net around them. We want to lasso them and put them in support of, you know, Romney and what's his face? You know, Ryan. You know, we're going to use that. So they're going to be going to the Paul Festival, and I guarantee freaking tea, you're going to have politicians there wearing, you know, their Adam Smith ties and saying how freedom they are and all that kind of stuff. And, oh, and here's my card and vote for me. You know, so, right. I, you know, tell me about the other politicians, the RNC and their involvement. Now that you're going to have the event, how do they want to get involved and they want to be your buddy?
Well, you know, actually, we haven't had too much contact with the RNC over this whole thing. But
no,
we've had
politicians?
Not really, no.
You're the plague. You're the plague. Run away.
Well, we didn't even really reach out to them in the first place, but they're kind of ignoring us, which we see as cooperation. You know, I mean, as long as they leave us alone, then we feel okay with that. But we've got the Libertarian Party involved and the Independent Party and the Constitution Party involved with us. They all approached us and wanted to be involved, so they're welcome and they can come. And I mean, if the RNC wanted to, we would have, you know, included them, I suppose. We do have, Ron is a Republican. We have a lot of people that want to reform the RNC.
Yeah, okay, now we're going to talk about that. We're going to reform. Reform! We're going to go fix it.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. Maybe not. Well, we're going to talk about it more. Deborah Robinette. You know, Deborah, good people. If she has anything to do with this, you know, it's going to be a heck of a lot better than if she didn't. We'll be right back.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Dollar Meltdown, so you can learn how to protect yourself and your family. Now, you can audit the Fed. You can end the Fed. But why not start by ignoring the Fed? Visit DontTreadOnMeme.com. That's Don't Tread on MEME, Fashioning the Silver Economy. A meme, a contagious idea that spreads within a culture, a spontaneous order. Nowhere is this more evident than in one's free choice in that most marketable of commodities, money. Let us Austrians use wallet voting. Don't Tread on Meme, the leading craftsman of silver dime trading cards, as well as some offbeat liberty-themed apparel. Follow the history of the dime card outreach at onceuponadime.info and get a silver calculator app at whatisthiscoinworth.info. Boycott an empire of theft. Build a society of consent. Don't Tread on Meme. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and Deborah Robinette from Paul Festival. Now, we're going to go over, you know, some of the price. I mean, you know, this is one thing that I found. I'm going, wow, man, it's $450 for VIP. I'm sorry, man, that's going up. Why? Because everybody wants to be a VIP. They wouldn't be VIP that much. We're selling too many of them. I'm going, okay, well, that's the kind of problems you like to have. So this is, when the VIP line is longer than the general admission line, you had a problem. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm sorry, it's $2,000 now. I don't know what the price is. We'll find out. But the point is that, you know, there's a lot of people that want to, it's going to be the place to be. It's the place to be. If you're inside of something, I mean, you know, is it the place to be for everybody? Probably not. It's the place to be for who? Deborah, tell me, explain to me, you know, people, there's some people, I mean, they got to be, I know a lot of people here, you know, they're, you know, delegates and so on, people that are going, just activists. It's a place to be. I am going to be at Paul Festival. Man, it's going to be great. I got to be. Who are those people? Who are the ones that they got to be there?
Well, right now we have over 300 delegates signed up to be there. So that was kind of interesting that we got such a good sign up from them. But I think, you know, just liberty-minded people. I mean, it's a place for like-minded people to gather together, to celebrate, to network, to make plans for what they're going to do when they go back into their communities when this is over. Because, you know, we were all inspired by Dr. Paul, but when his term is over in Congress, he's done, and we're still here, and so we have to figure out, you know, what we want to do and how we want to go forward. And so this is our celebration. You know, the goal was really to try to converge our numbers on Tampa so that the country could see just how big this movement is. When we were on a call, a couple of the planners were on a call with presidential candidate Gary Johnson. He said to us, you know, you are the fastest growing movement in the country right now. You do know that, right? And I mean, when he said that to me, it was kind of an epiphany, because it didn't dawn on me. And I know that he knows that because, you know, he's been in politics for a while and he's got his finger on the pulse. And so it was interesting hearing him say that. And it kind of, you know, spurred me on that we really do need to get everybody who's liberty-minded, who wants to focus on individual liberty down into Tampa, because if we don't try to do something, we're going to lose this country altogether. And it's up to us to do something, and this event could be a launching pad.
You know, I'm sure it is, certainly for me, but probably not in the way that you intend. I mean, I've had Gary Johnson in studio, and we had, you know, a good conversation. I got to, you know, get a gist of him. And, in fact, in last Halloween, we had a fundraiser here in Fountain Hills. And I told him, I said, you know, look, we're going to do this party for you, and we'll be chilling, and it's all good. But you just got to get over the idea that a bunch of people at the party is going to be wearing Ron Paul Revolution shirts. I mean, you just got to get over it.
Right, he knows that. Yeah.
So, no, he does. And I had Judge Gray on yesterday. And he was in Phoenix, or yesterday or the day before, whenever it was. And I had a private conversation with him, and both of them. I just, you know, this fair tax thing, you can't get over that. I mean, you're not going to have all the revolutionaries going to get all excited about, you know, your way to rip them off. I mean, it's just not going to happen. They're starting to understand it now. They're kind of, yeah, you're right, Ernie, you know, it didn't work, you know. And I'm going, look, you know, the standard set by Dr. Paul is so high because it's based on a principle. And what is the proper role of government? Well, they want government to not be as bad. We're gonna tame it a little bit. We're going to only let it steal a little bit, you know. And it's just a matter of degree. And that was a discussion I had off air with the judge. I'm going, you know, you're just talking degrees. I can't get excited about, you know, a degree of evil. You know, I can't. So that afternoon, they were here. They called me because I have a media list. They didn't even ask me for it. I mean, I was giving it to them. But they're going, oh, Ernie, we need you to call. I go, he's here, and now you want to call the media? I go, man, I used to take a week to build up to this kind of stuff. We do it for Dr. Paul. We do it for other people. I'm going, you're killing me. You guys are so So I'm really averse to politics, especially GOP in the RNC next door politics. Now, Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul, that was a, you know, it turned out well. But in the end, it became a Dr. Paul thing, and he participated thing. Well, it doesn't look like he's going to participate in your thing. Now, you got a lot of other people, though. You know, Peter Schiff, Gary Johnson, Lou Rockwell, Chuck Baldwin, Tom Woods, Michael Scherer, Kokesh, Franchi, Block, you know, Larry Pratt, Rhodes, Stuart Rhodes, Sheriff Mack, Scott Horton. It goes on and on and on and on and on, and I'm going, you know, Anthony Gregory, that's a one I'd go see. Carla from the Free State. I mean, you know, there's going to be a lot of great speaker and presentations over the days there. A lot of bands. I mean, you know, this is the place to be. But I'm telling you, I need to, what do you think is going to happen after? What are you guys planning for?
Well, you know, I mean, I remember having a conversation with you before. When we talked about the movement, and you know, your concern is, you said, Deb, you're talking about the movement like it's a person, you know, like it's an entity that's all one, you know, like the Borg or something. So, you know, and you're right, we're not. I mean, you know, the grassroots, the Liberty grassroots, you know, trying to get them to do something is like herding cats, and everybody knows that. So, but I think basically, you know, it's that message, that message of individual liberty, and that if we lose it, we lose our country, that really focuses everybody. And so, you know, I think for me, when the event is over, I think one of the important things people need to do is they need to go back into their communities and start networking and preparing for what's to come, because I firmly believe that we are going to have a collapse. And I think that the establishment has got a new system all set up for us to collapse into.
Yep.
And if we don't have the ability to fight that, then we're going to have to go along with it. And everybody knows, you know, that we do have our protections in the Bill of Rights that they haven't been able to take away from us yet. And if we're smart and we go back into our communities and we set up our bartering systems and alternate currencies and our trading systems and network with each other and know each other and protect our communities and trade with other communities and stuff, if FEMA tries to come in and say, oh, we're here to save you, you know, we can say, well, we don't need saving. And these are the kinds of things we seriously have to think about as a country and as a movement.
We don't need saving. You know,
right, we don't.
We're going into break here real quick. I just want to make this one point. I always say, you can't herd cats. I go, yes, you can. Let me tell you how you herd cats. You hit the can opener.
They know,
they know there's tuna. Man, here they be a-coming. But what was the tuna? It was libertarian philosophy represented by Dr. Paul. But if you keep hitting the can opener and they get there and you go, well, it wasn't tuna. It was kind of almost pretend maybe dried cat food. We kind of, they're like, never mind. They don't come to the can opener anymore. Keep
excellent
the tuna.
Things out.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Me, Ernest Hancock, Deborah Robinette, representing Paul Festival. Now, you changed the name to Paul Festival from Paul Festival. Tell me what's going on there. What's that about?
Well, we changed the name from Paul Festival to Paul Festival. It's just a subtle change, and it's just to sort of show that we're detaching from, you know, the Paul name, kind of, because we've taken a lot of grief for using his name from the Ron Paul Kool-Aid drinkers, shall I call them. There's a lot of them out there, and if he's not going to be somewhere, they're not going to be somewhere, and they think we should have asked for permission to have this event, and we should have, I mean, it's just ridiculous. These people who fall in lockstep, it doesn't matter who it is. It's that cult of personality thing, I think. But there's a lot of them out there, and, you know, we just decided that since he's not going to attend our event, he's not going to publicly support our event, that even though we are doing this in his honor, and that hasn't changed, we're doing it, we definitely did this in his honor and to show our numbers in Tampa and have fun doing it, we just thought that it was time to, you know, de-link from the whole Ron Paul.
Well, how'd you do that?
Personality. Well, you know, Susan Wolf came up with the acronym, People Awakening, what is it? People Awakening and Uniting for Liberty, which is, you know, his name, P-A-U-L. And it sort of helps us with that springboard idea that I mentioned, you know, in the previous segment of, you know, when he retires, it's, we're still here. And it's,
well, what's he going to be doing? Has he said anything? Have you talked to him? Is he like, yeah, after this, you know, January 2013, I'll be what?
Well, I talked to him a couple of days ago, but we didn't talk about his future and what his plans are or anything. The focus was mainly around our event and his event and how we were going to, you know, manage this. And he has some concerns. You know, he's worried that we're going to have the opposition trying to come in and cause disturbances so that the
good
media, I mean, we've got over 40 people. We've already issued over 40 media press credentials, and he said he's got like 48. So, you know, he's concerned like we are, you know, that there's going to be a disturbance, and then the focus is going to be on that. And
absolutely.
Say, oh, see those Ron Paul people.
You are the disturbance. I mean, you know, just the fact that you even have it. Why do you think they want to be there to cover the whatever disturbance they're going to create, disturbance and being disturbed? You know, I'm just,
right.
Wow, this is so, I give you an example. As I'm talking to different people, oh, yeah, well, what did you guys get? And I'm like, what, where in the hell have you been? I mean, this Levolution thing is generational and gone worldwide. You have no idea what, you don't even know what you're talking about. You don't understand the power of just individual awareness. And they go, well, most people are so stupid. And I go, you know what? Let me tell you what. Most of those people don't count, okay?
The people that are involved in awakening, they are the A-type. They are the influential. They are the engaged. They are the ones that, you know, make the wheels turn. And when you, what you're begging for, what you want, what you desire, what you think you need, is for Atlas to shrug. Just to go, you know, we're done, man. All right, you guys want to do this? You got it? You want it on your own? You have it? You good? All us productive people and all us that are, you know, optimistic, we're going to go out and we're just going to survive. We're going to breathe in and out longer than you. We'll see who wins in the end, you know? And we're just breathing in and out. And I know, Deborah, you're kind of, you know, going that way anyway. You live on a few acres in Southern California. You know, you kind of are hoping to get, and I'm sure you probably did, you know, a lot more kind of this prepping for the future we need to get ready for.
Oh, yeah.
So this is, and then what kind of, you know, attitude a lot of the people that's going there? I mean, is it all politics? You know, and where are the activists gone? That's what I was trying to explain, you know, to a lot of these people. I'm going, you guys don't get it. It's an attitude. It's a movement in the mind. It's a revolution, a love-evolution between the ears on a generational level, across borders, across boundaries, across countries, you know, without flags. It's just, you don't get it. But they want to get hold of the handle, and you and Paul Festival represent that at this time and this place in Tampa more than anything else. And they want it, or they want to destroy it, or they want to make fun of it, or they want to demean it. They want to do any and everything. And that is what Dr. Paul is afraid of. He's like, they are targeting you like you wouldn't believe, and I don't want to be over there in the crosshairs. That's what's going on, in my opinion.
I think so.
It's yeah, possible. Of course. What else is?
But however, he did tell me that that he's got that his family just bought like 25 tickets to attend it.
Of course they did. You know, but he's not going to put his name and him go and he be part of and him responsible, whatever, because it's not under their control. Which is, you know, if it's right. Benton and Weed, I can tell you, let me tell you who, you know, is that big giant liaison doing RNC, negotiating future of and whatever. His initials are Doug Weed, okay? So I'm just like, I've known this from the second his name came up, I already knew where this is going. I'm going, man, this, you guys are just pawns on the board. So the people that are involved, I mean, you get like Lou Rockwell and Chip, well, especially Lou. I mean, if I had to pick someone that would be close to Dr. Paul, it would be Lou. And right. Lou's responses to all this is what?
I haven't talked to Lou personally. He's a friend of Tom Woods. I'm friends with Tom, but I haven't personally asked Tom what Lou thinks about all of this. So I can't really give you an answer on that. I know how Tom feels about it. I mean, he's put out a couple of videos on our behalf, and you know, he's disgusted with the whole thing. I mean, there's people just do not understand why there's no support for the event at all coming from the campaign or from Ron. I mean, Ron's doing it privately. He's doing it in emails and on phone calls, but he won't bring himself to do a video for us. He won't bring himself to do an email. You know, mention us in one of his emails, and it's just not clear to everyone why that is. But it could be.
I know exactly why.
Yeah, it could be as you said. I mean, he's worried that there's going to be a false flag situation at our event, and that's just not going to happen.
I'm not worried. That's not what I think is, you know, going to happen. In fact, I think that wouldn't serve them anyway. But this is what I believe the situation is. They made it very clear to me over 4 years ago that this, you know, the kind of we're in the future and Ernie and, you know, the Paul Foundation, you know, Ron Paul Foundation eventually became, you know, Campaign for Liberty and all this kind of stuff. They take you up to the mountain and say, all this you could be part of if, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't have any intention, don't care, don't. And I warned Michael Nystrom, you know, he was at that meeting too, along with Trevor Lyman. And we're just, you know, there's a couple dozen of them there, you know, telling us what's going to be what. And we, all three of us, were like, you know, you guys don't get it. You think that there's some, they were so impressed and amazed and wondering where in the heck did we get all these donors for tens and tens and tens of millions of dollars being donated to them, and did we have that database? What's the database? What's the secret little, okay, you guys don't get it. We don't even know who they were. We just put a link to the donate page on you and just say on this day, go do it. You know, it was the message that did it. They didn't understand it. And all these people, they amassed, and nobody really takes this to heart. I keep telling everybody, and I'm telling you, we get into the next segment, We'll go into, you know, from some of your perspective, get some down and dirty on this, but I'll tell you what the thing was. They made it very clear to me, and Michael and Trevor, that their goal was one thing, to take over and reform the GOP. That was their goal. And I'm like, I don't care. I'm looking for a wooden stake and a mallet, okay? That's your goal? Well, you know, vaya con Dios, man, because I couldn't possibly care less. So I'm going, you guys go ahead and you let me know how that works out. Well, that's what this is all about. How does the Paul Festival help them take over the GOP? I don't know.
It doesn't.
Well, I wouldn't want to piss you off. So, you know, I'm like, wow, It's a cultural thing, of which Deborah Robinette at the tip of the spear. Oh, we're going to be working together in the future. I guarantee it. You just might not see it as much.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Oh, yeah, you got me chair dancing. Oh, I got that white man overbite thing going on. Woo! Are you on video? Yeah, if not, you missed it. Okay. Deborah Robinette, Paul Festival. You know, this guy, I was telling her enough. I know a lot of the audience knows, you know, what my 2013 project is, but bottom line is this. I look in the future and what? I see electricity in Ernie's future. And if I can get it, not have to, you know, keep paying the man for it and be off the grid and be an inspiration for everybody to do it. It's all the solar panels are cheap, man. They're 1/8 what they were, you know, 8 years ago. And the thing is that, man, yes, in Boston, you can get zero, but it's the battery. The battery, and that technology is going, and they always get some government program. It always gets bought up. It always, you know, the Edison batteries got bought up by Exide, which makes lead acid, and they put it up on the shelf. It's like this 100-mile-per-gallon carburetor thing. You know, they're just like, nope, no, we don't make those. We need you to get these because they're disposable, and we're the Edison batteries you will to your children. They don't go bad and so on because that's we need disposable. We like that. So I'm just going, you know, this is it. And I remember Exide, he came and spoke at some church function I had. He's some big Christian, you know, sponsor NASCARs or whatever. It's the same guy, I remember. And I'm going, yeah, it's the politics. It's all about self-interest. It's all about, you know, monopolizing. It's all about using government force. It's all about eliminating competition. Well, we're open source, kind of doing freedom, self-sustaining, going to get it taken care of. Deborah Robinette, she knows this and preparing for herself. You think, did you put all your eggs in this Ron Paul Festival future kind of basket? Or are you kind of hedging your bet a little bit on something else maybe?
Oh, well, I mean, I think I already explained what my plans are. I mean, I want to go come back. I've already started a neighborhood network project where, you know, we're gathering people together to be able to rely on each other when this whole system collapses. So, no, my eggs, I'm not all for, I do not believe that the GOP can be reformed. I'm against political parties in the first place, and I just think it's foolhardy. I think the whole system needs to be cleansed, personally. I'm just not sure how it's done. And, Ernie, I think you're a smart man. Energy's where it's at. If everybody, you know, had free energy, they wouldn't have the control they have. I mean, they just wouldn't.
Yeah, you got to be on the grid. You got to be on the grid. Grid. Are you gridded? I mean, you know, I'm convinced enough that this is, I'm all in. You know, because let me tell you what is going to happen in Ernie's world. Whatever freaking Ernie says.
You know, that's the way it should be. And
that's one thing everybody, this has been the big deal. They're looking to me, and you would imagine, I mean, you know, people certainly here in local politics, it's getting down to the wire, and we're starting getting to the primary here in Arizona at the end of this month. And Ernie, we hate to, you know, I can see it in their voice. Well, we know better than to talk to you, but I have been tasked by those with money to come to you and look for what it would take for you to give us some secret database or access to or to do and come on. Well, come on the show. I don't care. You know, but no, we don't want that. I know. Okay. What do you want? Well, I know what they want. They want the handle. Whenever you create a movement or a cause or an organization, you know, around any kind of idea, sooner or later, the organization becomes more important than the reason you created it. But what it does is it provides them a list. They love lists. They're going, I go, look, you want the donors, Ron Paul's, I don't know, go to the FEC reports. Go get it. Knock yourself out. I don't care. You think that's where the movement is. It's not. It's in 13-year-old kids. You know, it's in the young, it's Generation Next. Well, where are they massing? They're not massing. They're just individuals that know what the heck is going on. You guys, I just want to backhand them. I go, you don't get it. I said, you know what? I'll just wait. I don't have to. I mean, I'm tired of pointing for 20 years. I'm saying, look, this is going to happen. 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 This is why it happens. And they go, yeah, well, you're just lucky for the 14th time. You know, I'm going, you know, I'm not playing with you anymore. If you don't have enough silver and enough food, you're just roadkill.
You're absolutely right. I mean, when I couldn't believe how many times other organizations have asked us for our list. They want our mailing list.
Of course they do.
I'm not even going to name the names because I don't want to get
everybody.
pretty much. And you know, we refuse to give our mailing list out on for moral reasons. And that just upsets people. They don't understand why they can't bargain with us, you know. And they'll try anything. They'll try to give you money, and you know they want your list.
I tell you what they do. This is their new tactic. They go, yeah, no. I go, well, there isn't one. You don't have one. That's it. You don't really have. There's no organization. You're just smoking mirrors. There's nothing. You know, like they're challenging you or something, or attacking your ego or what. I'm going, wow, man, you guys are desperate.
It's like, whatever. Say what you want. You're not getting the list.
You know, the GOP, you know, how's this Ryan thing been playing? I mean, they were trying to give the idea that he's some big libertarian and he's, you know, Reed's Fountainhead or something. And I'm going, you know, there was an article. As soon as they did that, a friend of mine sent me an article where he was denouncing Randianism and objectivism and, you know, and they can't be libertarian because they're not Christian enough or something. And I'm going, you know, wow, this is, you know, I don't know how they're trying to paint them. Are they go to Deborah and they say, Deborah, look, Paul Ryan, he's going to balance the budget, the deficit in 30 years. I remember it was 50 years. You know, now it's down to 30, I guess. So they go, oh, he's going to do that. Wow, we should pick him. I mean, are they really touting him?
I guess, Ernie. You know, I don't really have an opinion about him. To me, he's just another part of the entrenched establishment.
Ding, ding,
so
ding,
I,
ding, ding, ding. Thank you, Deborah. You know, I enjoy talking. I tell you what, my only sadness has been that you're immersed in this whole thing and you've taken on so much responsibility, and I knew it was going to happen to someone I really admire and like. And I know the best that can be done is going to be done because you're involved in it. But I'm like, you know, I we need to just take a vacation together, relax, come out here and chill. We'll go visit you and we'll just kind of, you know, depressurize and just hang.
Oh, Ernie,
us.
I'm going to take you up on that.
I can't wait.
Be careful what you say.
I can't wait. I mean,
oh,
just,
that'd be great.
This is, you know, relax when it's all done and this is over and we just chill and, you know, watch the goats. Because I'm telling you, you know, I know that you understand. I know you and your family are prepared. I know, but you have to check off certain boxes so that you can feel comfortable with making the decision. I tried. I did it. And what they want to convince you, oh, no, you didn't try hard enough. Get back in line. Get it back on the hamster wheel. Do it one more time and lend credibility to this system. And I'm going, no, that's the first thing, is quit lending credibility to the beast that's devouring you. So I'm,
right.
You know, but you got to go through and do the best effort that you have with the Paul Festival. And it is going to be a party. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people. I mean, I'd enjoy myself just by going and visiting with the people. But I'm just, you know, I got batteries to make, man.
Yeah, I you know what? I completely understand what you're talking about. And I understand it more now than ever after going through this process. And so there's going to be a certain amount of detaching for me after this. And I've already discussed it with the planning committee. They all know. And,
no, you must stay in. In the future, we're going to build it into an organization that's going to rule the planet.
Well, you know, they're hopeful. So.
Deborah, see, did I or did I not tell you exactly what was going to happen in what order and how and where you were going to be at the end?
And you were right.
Yes, I was.
You were right, Ernie, and I should have listened to you in the first place.
It wasn't hard, okay? Everybody thinks, how did you know, Ernie? I'm like, how the hell did you not know? I mean, you know, all the signs are there. It's just people put on blinders, and they got to do what they, because they got to go through the process. And I never discourage people from doing exactly what you were doing, because I did the same thing. People would go to me, and they say, Ernie, if you do blah, 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 I go, yeah, but I'll be different. You know, it's different. It's different. It's different. No, it's never different. Okay, there are those that just want to be left alone. There are those that just won't leave them alone. And as soon as you find out who's not leaving you alone, they're the bad guys. Dissociate. Go do something else. Deborah Robinette, I guarantee you and I are going to be working together in the future, because we understand that there is one, and we just have to keep breathing in and out longer than them. What's the best satisfaction is just, let's see, I'm living, I'm happy, I'm healthy, my family's cool, and I don't know whether they are or not, and don't care, okay? So this is, but go ahead and give out the website where they can go there and party with a lot of people and kind of get network, because they're going to need this network for after anyway. How do they get there? What's the website?
www.paulfestival.org.
Deborah Robinette is not done. I work with people that I like and I respect and I know can get stuff done in, you know, focus on, and who else better than Deborah Robinette that has gone through it on the dark side and come out the other side with a much better understanding. I've done the same thing. You know, I went through this, I know. And Deborah, I love you, baby. I mean, I Don and I want to, you know, be part of our future, and it includes Deborah Robinette. PaulFestival.org. Go, and just enjoy yourself. And don't worry about all the crap.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
But we are relatively concerned about what? I don't know. They, them, those. Those ones won't leave me alone. Okay, this is what's going on. We just had Deborah Robinette talking about the Paul Festival, and I really like Deborah. She's good people. And I tell you what she's learned. This political thing can suck it. You know, I'm so done with what, you know, and but you got to go through the process. Well, there's some people that like the process. They love the process. They involve themselves in the process. They are entertained by the process. They love, you know, more than anything else, the process. I give you Jeff Greenspan, Mr. Process. Hello, Jeff. How are you?
Nice introduction. Thank you, Ernie.
You, Mr. Processor. You know, you're in the middle of, you're a sausage maker, man.
Well, you know what it is I'm a business process engineer by trade, so to me it's a system. And, you know, if you look at it as a system, there's ways to make the system work. And that's what I work on. That's what I do.
Yeah, I want to make that. You know what? What's the one thing a libertarian fears more than anything else? There's a government program that works, so we don't have a whole lot of fear. You know what I mean? I don't know. Will Jeff make it work? Let me think. Probably not. Okay.
Well, you know, in a free market, if, you know, we're libertarian, big L or small, right? In a free market, we believe in division of labor. So some people are good at some things, and some people are good at other things. This is one thing I happen to be good at and can teach others. So.
You kick my ass in fixing process. I mean, that's how I'm going, you know what? This is, well, I tell you what, this is the history. I've known Jeff for years. And
over 10 years now, yeah.
Wow, I forgot where we even started. How the heck did we even come across each other? I don't even remember.
well, we lived like less than a mile from each other.
Oh, at the time, yeah. You know, well, this is what the deal is. They were Dr. Paul when they first started the campaign, and I already knew where this was going to go. It was going to be a big movement. There's going to be a revolution around a uncompromising libertarian message, and this Republican part, you know, didn't care. And the longer I could keep Dr. Paul up on that presidential podium in the debates, the longer I could keep him up there, the better everything would be for everybody. So I'm just, that was my goal. That was it. I just want to keep him up. There's a movement. You can't get him off of that stage. If you do, the credibility of the whole system comes tumbling down because they're on the street, signs everywhere, blah, blah, blah. That was my thing. I couldn't give a crap about delegates or, you know, taking over the party or, you know, internal conventional blah, blah, blah. So when Lou Moore and Kent Snyder came to Arizona and talked in the first workshop, we're making the signs and all that kind of stuff, they were more supportive of that than a lot of people realized, but they didn't really, you know, they couldn't have anything to do with that. I didn't want them to anyway. Well, they were like, we need somebody, and they wanted me, and I'm like, hell no, because I am not registered Republican. I'm not helping you save the party. Screw them. I don't care. This has nothing to do with that. But I know a couple of guys, Andre Campos and Jeff Greenspan, and I go, Jeff, you need to get Jeff. For what you guys want, the kind of person that's inside, that understands the rules, the convention, the games, the politics, and doesn't trust these SOBs, but knows how to play and doink them, Jeff Greenspan, he's your man. Well, then, you know, he gave him a figure, and they go, well, God, he like really wants to get paid. I go, yeah, he's got like a real job. You know, he wants to do that, man, you're going to have to pay, but you better pay, because if that's what you want, you need Jeff. Eventually, they got Jeff. Jeff is probably the most informed, the most understanding, the rose-colored glasses gone off of Jeff a long time ago. But if you're going to win an election and you want to really have an effect, Jeff. But what Jeff understood is that they didn't really want to win an election. So you started to come out with, you know, you and I had a lot of conversations. You're going, man, there's something weird going on here. Tell me and the audience everything.
What are you trying to do to me, Ernie?
No, do it. Now it's the end, man. This is the last show. It's been taking me months to get you on. We're going into August. Here comes the GOP convention. What the hell you think you're on for? Go.
Well, I when I play something like this, I play it to win. And when I mean win, you know, I have a message, win, education. Yeah, that's all important, too. And, Ernie, that's why we have you, you know. But what I do is get it across the finish line, actually win. And so if I'm involved, that's what I want to see happen. Whether, you know, some people might believe that's a pipe dream or it's partially reality. If I do it, I think it's possible to happen. So, that's the game that I played last time. That's the game which I thought was even more in sight this time. That it was a very real possibility to win.
It was. They did everything they could to make sure it wasn't. And I'm like, what the heck is going on? Come on, man. Spill.
So I can't say that for sure.
I can.
We can speculate. but, you know, let's say that their true intention was to win, right? Then some of the actions that occurred seem to not make logical sense, right?
Right.
Because you wouldn't do or say some of those things if the intention was to cross the finish line. So, you know, but again, I wasn't on staff this cycle, and so people, you know, staff might say that, you know, I'm being presumptuous or something, and you know, maybe I am a little bit. So, you know, I don't want to be too judgmental because I wasn't on, you know, working on the inside as much as I was last time, but I mean, you know,
blah blah blah. Skip to the end.
You don't in April. You don't say you're going to lose if you're trying to win. You just don't say it.
There is every evidence. I mean, as much as anybody come to me and you and I discuss and what's going on and who and everything and like, you know, having Deborah on for the last hour. You know, I'm telling you. You know, I knew from the beginning it was going to devolve to this. I'm just going, look, no, there are forces. It's a game. It's all a psyop. The second you go screaming Constitution, you know, you're already putting us on a plantation. You know, it's like, oh, you're on the Constitution plantation of we rule and supreme rule of, and kind of in the Supreme Court says it's okay for us to put you in a free speech zone and get over it. And I'm just going, you know, this is this whole concept, this whole thing. And when you do have people rise up, the people start getting involved. They start really pushing for delegations. All of a sudden, we're going to the convention. Let's go kick us some ass. And they may still. And the Paul campaign, you know, is buddying up with RNC and Rand's thing and all this kind of, you know, oh, you don't have to worry about us mucking up the GOP because we're here, you know, to go against Obama because Romney's so much better. I'm like, seriously? And then, you know, you got to give me in the last minute here of this first segment, you know, give me your Rand Paul opinion thing. Come on, go.
Well, to me, it's, you know, I'm not going to judge the man.
Quit equivocating?
No, I'm not equivocating. I'm telling you my honest opinion. So I'm not going to judge the man. I actually think he's honest and straightforward, or he truly believes he is. So my just more seasoned political opinion is people don't respect you when you give away the house, right? It's like playing poker. Do you give away your cards and show your cards when you're winning or when you have the possibility of winning? Of course not. People, especially these nasty, nasty power brokers who only respect power, you like McCain, for example, right? If you concede anything, if you concede an inch, you've conceded a mile. And I don't know why. Maybe he did understand that, and I don't think he did. I think he actually thought he was going to get something through an endorsement. He'll get nothing.
He thought that the movement was going to stay in his pipe. That, you know, they were playing the NRA. I tell you exactly what they were doing. And I smelled Doug Weed all over this thing. It was, well, where else you going to go? That's all that they were thinking. And all right, well, you got to vote for the, you know, gun-grabbing scumbag Republican because where else you going to go? That was the attitude that they had. You go like, you know what? Let me tell you where I'm going to go. Somewhere else.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Yeah, for Mr. Jeff Greenspan, he likes him some Johnny Quest. Okay. Yeah, you knew you heard that before, all you guys our age. All right. Now, this is some of the things I want to touch on, you know, in this segment. Barry Hess is, sitting in. He's going to, have his input, I know. Next Friday, it's going to be a really big shoe. We're going to be the shoe. All right. You know, gurgle. You know, they blow some smoke into the lens. All right. Now, some of the things that we want to go on, I know Jeff is really big on this national ID thing. That's been one of his driving things through this whole thing, and it just keeps coming. While they're doing all this shiny object, look over here kind of thing, it just keeps getting worse. You know, I want to talk about the convention. We want to talk about, I want to give Rand Paul a big sloppy wet kiss and $20. Let me tell you why. When he did the Mitt Romney endorsement, I saw the logjam break loose. All the people finally started going, you know what? I'm not waiting anymore. This political thing is not, we got to do something else. Kind of, I need to buy more ammunition and food. I mean, you know, get some silver. I mean, I saw a total shift in the way people looked at what was going on. So I'm going, what was your experience when that happened, Jeff? I mean, you know, Rand, you went, typical, what the hell? What was your initial response?
So tying together all those threads you opened the segment with, right? First of all, full disclosure, I am a Rand supporter, okay? Ernie, and a Republican. Ernie, the difference, I think, in your and my vision...
Wait. You are a Rand supporter.
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Rand Paul, right?
Yeah.
Just checking.
Yes. So, Ernie, I think the difference in your and my vision is we both saw the same future, which is basically concentration camps, but I thought they were avoidable, and you thought they were not, right? So I'm actually coming over to your side. And the reason why I say this ties together the threads of what you opened the segment with is because none of what the government wants to do is accomplishable without national ID. The first thing they have to do is identify you so they can track you, so they can surveil you, so they can register your guns, and then confiscate your guns, and then start talking about political re-education, et cetera. I mean,
cattle cars.
Right. So through history, this has been the same story over and over and over.
Cattle car.
And so the crux of all of everything the government wants to do is national ID. So I think the difference is when you said the logjam cleared is, you know, once, in as you put, you know, Rand Paul pulled the NRA stunt, which is where else are you going to go? And some of the people you're talking about are doing what you said, ammo, food, water, silver, whatever. I think it's reinforcing the fact that the future that you and I both see is unavoidable, which is disheartening for me because up until very recently, I did think it was still a possible avoidable future. You see where I'm going with
that? Yeah, no, I lost that illusion a long time ago.
And so one of the things that you know was really disheartening was to see so-called conservatives who claim to be against national ID then come out in support of every single program that where national ID is the foundation of. So one of those is E-Verify, right? So especially in Arizona, conservatives were led to believe or do believe that E-Verify is part of the closed border anti-illegal immigration agenda and will stop illegal immigration.
No, it's a track you.
Right. Well, no, but beyond that, nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, E-Verify has always been, since its original conception under the Clinton administration, which is actually a Clinton administration idea, it's always been, and the CFR, by the way, which in Robert Pastor's paper, it's always been part of the open border agenda. So now we have this backdoor amnesty that Obama and Janet Napolitano put together. They're calling it the backdoor amnesty, where if illegals, certain age, whatever, register, in other words, get a taxpayer identification number, then they'll be able to work. Well, how are they going to be able to work? Well, because E-Verify is nothing more than a user front end sitting on top of the national ID database, which you and I are all in now.
You have Big Brother's permission to work, or
exactly.
You don't.
Exactly. So they get, exactly. So they register, which is get a taxpayer identification number, go in the national ID database where you and I are now because of Russell Pearson SB 1070, and their flag gets set to employment eligible in E-Verify. So E-Verify is the tool that will be used to validate their work eligibility, proving exactly what we said a couple of years ago, that E-Verify is a tool of the open border agenda, not the closed border agenda. Now, in terms of citizens, it's completely unconstitutional because where in the Constitution does it say that you need federal government permission before you get a job if you're a citizen? But that's exactly what E-Verify is. So it's a tool of control. It's based on the national ID database. It sits right on top of it. And it's part of the open border agenda. So this is what I mean, where I don't know if that future of camps is avoidable, because once citizens are registered, once national ID system is in place, then it's just a matter of rolling out the rest of the operationalizing the rest of the programs, which they're of course doing, as we see now with this backdoor amnesty, and now with the recent shootings, talking once again about closing the gun show loophole, so every gun purchase is registered like you have to do when you buy retail today.
And no one can buy or sell anything without that mark, which was either the name of the beast or the number representing his name. I'm telling you, if you're a Christian, you know, and you're going to, you know, this is, I'm going, here it is. Here it is. You can't work or buy or sell or anything without the number. This is what this is. They're creating to do the number. That's what we were so warned about, whether you believe it in divine inspiration or not. They just know. Let me tell you how you get to be under, you know, on the king's ranch. You get a number from the king, okay? And this is what they're doing, because if you have to go to a list, either you are on the list or you're not on the list. That's what all this, you know, they take away your U.S. citizenship. We got to take away your citizenship as if you lose human rights if you don't get the king's number. That's the idea, the concept that they're putting in. And the only thing that can challenge that is culture, is people understand that's all BS. Well, this is what Jeff Greenspan's been screaming about as long as I've known him, for over a decade. I mean, you know, this guy's been, no, let me tell you why I know. because in Pennsylvania, when you're an IT guy, and they're doing deadbeat dad and stuff, you were implementing, giving the database over to the list of the man doing before they were even admitting they were doing it. So you knew. You knew, you knew, you knew.
95, with the implementation, so the deadbeat dad federal legislation was nothing about deadbeat dads. It was all about creating the employment eligibility database, the national employment eligibility database. And I know this because I didn't realize it at the time, but I put the pieces together later. I was programming the interface from the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue into the federal deadbeat dads database. And I'm thinking to myself, why are we sending all this information that's not relevant to paying taxes to the federal government?
National database. And they went after me. We just even brought this stuff up when Russell Pierce did SB 1070. I'm a domestic terrorist, because I'm going, you're turning all this over to Janet Napolitano. You know that, right? Shut up, boy! Pay no attention to all your data going to the man.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Hancock here in the studio. Barry Hess has something to say, I'm sure. And, you know, Mr. Jeff Greenspan. Let me tell you what I want to talk with Jeff. Drag it out of him. Man, he's so freaking, it's like doing dentistry. All right. This is, you know, the convention, you know, what's going on there. And one thing you always said, I mean, throughout the last 5 years I've known you and we've been doing this stuff, it comes down to this. He goes, Ernie, they don't really want to win. They don't really want to win. Why would you say that? What's given you this evidence here lately?
So I don't know if I said exactly that, but so here's something that – so I'm a rules guy. We talked about, right? I'm a process guy. I know the rules. I know conventions. So they kept – you know, their focus is on, what states can we win, right? Because they're talking about boundedness of delegates. Now, I don't want to get into an argument of – are they really bound? Are they really not bound? Right. I have my own personal belief. You know, Arizona's own state law says that they'll make the law, not the bylaws of the party, but the actual state law says delegates will make a best effort to vote for who won the preferential primary. Right.
Yeah, so, and the party says if you don't commit to doing it, they take you off the delegation and replace you with an alternate.
Could they do that? Are there ways to get through it? Yeah. You know, is the law really binding? You know, whatever. I don't want to get into that. But where I'm going here is everybody's all tied up on whether delegates are bound. Well, it doesn't matter bound or not if you're not nominated, right? If you're not nominated, whether from you have 1,144 delegates or you're not nominated from the floor, whatever. Being bound, even if it's true that you are bound, right? Being bound is not the same as making a motion, right? Being bound is bound to how you're going to vote. Okay, well, voting on a candidate, voting after a motion, is not the same as making a motion. So bound or not, right? If you have a plurality of delegates, like Nevada does, or like Arizona actually had, we have a plurality, a majority, in fact, of Ron Paul delegates were our entire delegation to be seated, which were not because the state's under suspension. But the point is, if you have a plurality or a majority of delegates, bound or not, they can still make a motion. So Nevada, let's take Nevada. They have a clear majority of Ron Paul delegates. Technically, at least on paper, they're bound to vote for Mitt Romney. But being bound to vote for Mitt Romney does not stop them from making a motion to nominate Ron Paul. There's a very big difference. And this, I don't know if
they got to get recognized. They won't let them.
Well, no, my point is, though, this fact of boundedness versus the ability to make a motion from the floor is, I think, I don't know if it purposely went over the campaign's head or they're ignorant of it, but either way,
right? If they're ignorant of it, then why were they running a campaign? And if they're purposefully ignoring it, well, what does that mean? That means they don't want to win. Because if they knew this from the beginning, then they could have run a campaign irrespective of boundedness to ensure that Ron Paul was nominated.
They want something. And whatever it is they're going to give him, it's going to be something stupid like, ooh, Romney supports an audit. Yay. You know, I'm going, audit? I don't want to audit them. I want to ignore them. You know, it's not going to matter anyway. It's all going to go down. Dollars are going to crash. And then what? You know, blah, 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 blah. I don't care. So this is, I don't care. And I tell you, the best advice came from Bob Anderson, a good friend of mine. He goes, so much, I mean, this guy won't write two words, man. He's like, hell no. But he was motivated to write this. He goes, all right, I'm going to write an article. And he wrote the article, and he's his open letter to the delegates in Florida, and he's going, look, all the supporters of Dr. Paul, fine. It goes through all the thing. You know, Mitt gets nominated. He gets up there, does the speech. You do the Klingon disaffiliation thing. You stand up, and you turn your back to the stage. That's all you got to do.
Yep.
That would be good TV. I like that. That's a good idea. So I'm going, you know, I mean, if I had to have one thing, you want to have some info, this is what you do. When they do, they get you just stand up and turn around. Now, of course, you know what everybody else is going to do. They're going to stand up and start chanting USA or something. But, you know, I don't care. You know, I mean, save your soul a little bit. You know, do something. You know, say, no, I'm not, you know, no. You know, I'm so disappointed in... I'm not really disappointed. I mean, I knew it had to go through this. A lot of people and activists, they had to go through the process to see just how messed up this is and witness it firsthand. And after two election cycles, they're going, I had a lot of people going, oh, Ernie, it's different. 2020, they're more organized. They got it together, man. A lot of people are getting, they're getting in the state and this and that. And the fact that they saw more organization, they thought that was a good thing. And I'm going, oh, you guys don't get it. It's just creating a handle for somebody to wield. What did they do? Oh, here comes, Weed and Benton coming up and saying, oh, no, we're not running the win anymore, and don't worry about it. Pay no attention to the whatever. I mean, they got everybody into where they wanted them, going in all these different positions, and then they go, never mind. And I go, once you get in their suitcase, you guess what's going to happen. They're going to do what they want with the handle. And then they'll sell the handle. They'll get off to the handle. You know, Jesse's probably, he's making all kind of coin, being a representative, you get the database, and hire me, my consulting firm kind of crap. You know, I know where this goes. I know Doug's history. This is where this is going. So I'm going, all right, so where are we at now? What do you think is going to happen at the convention? What do you think is going to happen with the Paul Festival? What do you think the game plan is?
Well, I can tell you at the last, first of all, I don't totally agree with you on the organization, right? If you have an organization, in my opinion, that is in it to win it and knows what they're doing to execute to win it, that's fine. So my example I gave earlier of not knowing the difference between being bound and having the ability to move nomination from the floor, right? To me, that's an indicator, whether it's intentional or not, that someone wasn't paying attention or it wasn't an intention to win.
Their goal is to influence the GOP, to save the GOP, to alter the direction of GOP.
I'm for
screw
that,
Screw the
too.
GOP. Screw
well,
it!
Well, Ernie, that's your feeling, right?
Yes.
I would like to see that happen. But my point is, if you're going to be in it, then be in it to win it, right? Run as hard as you can to the bitter end across all possible obstacles.
Don't lie.
No compromise.
Donate to us. We'll do this. And then you take the money and do something else. I say you're a liar.
Yeah. Well, so what will happen to the convention? Well, I can talk about historically, right? Historically, our delegates in 2008 were told not to try to vote for Ron Paul. Will that happen this time? We can only speculate, right? But that did happen in 2008. What can I say?
Well, they're going to, now they're going to listen to them?
So I'm a big R Republican, but I'm also a small R Republican. And I believe in the delegate system. And what I mean by that is elected representation with delegation of power. So here's what I have to say to the delegates is this. You know, yes, we're Ron Paul supporters, and he's our guiding light. As Republicans, as Ron Paul Republicans, as Ron Paul delegates, whatever. That said, Ron Paul did not elect you to that delegate position. He did not. The national campaign did not. The state campaign did not. But state delegates did. In other words, those state delegates who elected you are your constituents.
So if you if they elected you on the presumption you're going to try to vote for Ron Paul, then you better darn well follow through, or else you're just another slimebag politician who says one thing to get elected, and then when you go to a party and you don't do your job.
Yep.
Simple as that.
Recruiting slimebag politicians at the delegate
point
level.
Point is, if you got elected as a Ron Paul delegate, then you better darn well follow through on what your constituents elected you to do.
All right. Skip to the end. Is there an after? What happens after? We gonna fix it after? When we come back, we'll ask Jeff that. And I'll let Barry ask a question and make a comment before he blows up. He just kind of showed up and he's got, I gotta say, so I'm gonna get a comment from Barry and Jeff. Then after this election, after, you know, is it better to have Romney, Ryan, and guaranteed war with Iran, or death, dying, and destruction of socialism with Obama? And can we just ignore both?
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
It's the devil inside. Yeah, devil inside the political system. And they're dancing with the devil thinking he's going to change him. It is Jeff Greenspan. Okay. So devil dancer Jeff Greenspan, you know, thinks that, you know, what's going to happen after all this in the convention and things and so on and whatever. I want to get, you know, Barry's opinion here. Barry, you know, help me out thing. I mean, you know, you've run against and been head-to-head debating with the bad guys, run for governor a few times, doing you and Jan Napolitano, you know, exchanging fisticuffs, you know, all over this philosophically, and I'm going, what opinion say you?
Well, I don't know. I think what's going to happen, and I'll be interested to see what Jeff says, on the transferability of Ron Paul's support. I don't think it's there. It's not going to go over to Mitt. The Mittyots are just going to have to deal with it. But, you know, Jeff, one thing I did want to comment on is the 1070 and the national ID. You were right on point. And Russell Pierce and Kavanaugh and I, we talked about this. I showed them ways to make their whole little silly nonsense legitimate, and they wouldn't do it because they wanted what they wanted. And they want to cast a net over all of us to ostensibly catch a few of us. But there's an opportunity in all this, and that's the part I wanted to get to. Jeff, think about it. We're all going to be in the national ID database. What do you do to be anonymous? You be somebody else. Get it?
Yeah, that's how you go to jail, man.
Hell, well, better that than a FEMA camp.
Well, but, you know, it's an interesting point Barry makes, because one of the things are concerned about is, oh, you know, matricula consular, oh, my gosh, Mexicans are, you know, going to get access to whatever. Think about what Barry just said. If the matricula consular is so easy to get and gets you access to a bunch of things, well, then maybe a patriot might want to learn to speak Spanish.
Hola.
You know, I've been tricked. What the heck? You're talking about a resume or something? What are you talking about?
The matricula consular is the Mexican identity card.
The green card.
And you can go into any consulate is what the... You know, the conservatives are worried about. You go into any Mexican consulate to get one.
Because that's how they get bank accounts and so on.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah, and then the Mexican government make that easy. Yeah, I remember that. Okay,
but
now...
Hey, can I tie together one quick point? So, Barry, you said you don't think it'll carry over to Mitt Romney. You talked to Russell Pierce. So let's tie all this together here, right? Ernie talked about Dancer of the Devil. These SOBs, excuse my French, they play a zero-sum game.
Right.
So they're either all in to win, and they think they're going to because they're sociopaths, or, you know, the other outcome is they completely lose. So it's binary, win-lose, right? There is no in-between. There's no horse trade. So here's the campaign in the middle trying to horse trade with people who don't horse trade. And do you think that gains them respect?
No.
So there is no dancing with the devil. So Ernie, you called me a devil dancer. I'm really not. I get that. I mean, the first thing you should learn is you can't dance with the devil and expect to not get burned. It's as simple as that. So the only way we're going to actually, if we were to influence the Republican Party, is completely the opposite of what the campaign thinks. because the best way to influence the party is to bring it. And you bring it all the way down to the line, across the line, as hard as you can, all the way to the end. No compromise, no horse trading, no devil dancing, period.
And had then the perfect show you, opportunity to exactly. do that, and they
then
didn't.
Then you show your power. And that's all these SOBs respect, period. They don't respect game playing.
They sold out. They made
right.
a deal. There was somebody. They threatened them with something. They offered them something.
There was
something.
No threats. There was no. You know
I think they were
no.
in from the beginning. Heck, you know, Doug Weed. His initials are Doug Weed, Doug Weed, Doug Weed. I'm telling you, I don't have to look any further than that. At the top is Doug. I already knew what was going to happen.
So the same thing goes for Russell Pierce. Russell Pierce didn't care. There's no reasoning with him. Even if you can logically and evidentially base with evidence, prove him 100% wrong.
Don't
he's
care.
Not in it for right or wrong. He doesn't care. He's either going to win or he's going to lose, and that's the only thing he's looking at.
Well, we look at winning and losing differently, and they try and make us look at it the way they do.
Oh, so like the campaign?
Yeah, everybody. You know, everybody in politics. All the.
So you mean like the national campaign?
Yeah, everybody. They always look at. They go to. I give you an example. They go. They go. Well, you didn't win. What'd you get? What'd you get? What'd you get? You know, I'm going, I don't know, a cultural shift on the entire freaking planet of this age group of whatever. That's what I got. I consider that a W and screw you. And they go, yeah, but you didn't get the shiny badge or get to wear the ring. And I'm like, who we're hobbits, man. Yeah, we're trying to chuck the ring in the fires of Mordor. You're confusing me with someone that gives a crap. And they hate that. They hate it. Well, all they want from me, and when I get all the schmoozing and everything, is when they think there's some access or some, you know, lending of name or some kind of database or something that they can use. And I'm going, you know what? Not only is there not one, even if there was one, I never accumulated it because it's a decentralized thing. They don't think open source. They don't think that way. The whole world has changed that way, and they are dinosaurs. They don't get it. And I am not, I'm not wasting any more time explaining it to them. I go, look, it's just going to happen. I can wait. I'm good.
Well, see, the point they don't seem to understand is that their prize, that win, is not valuable to us at all. And that freaks them out is when we just say, we don't want it. You know, whatever you're offering, we don't need it. And
yeah, if you would
away.
Run, they do the same thing to Barry. They go, well, if you were to run as Republican to do this, they do the same thing with me. If you do this, if, then you have a really good likelihood of having this corrupt, stinky, slimy, devil horn, shiny badge. Yay! I mean, you know, I'm like, seriously?
Well, see, this leaves me as the odd man out.
Yes, it does.
Because I don't agree with that, and I don't agree with what the national campaign is attempting to do. Because to me, if you understand the nature of politics, politics is power. It's raw power. It's education is good. Ernie, that's why we have you. But if you understand politics, and unfortunately, but this is the way it's been since the beginning of time in Adam and Eve, it is raw power. You bring your maximum numbers. You play to win. End of story.
Win what?
Well, I disagree. So, you know, I'm not against the education approach, and I think it's a necessary, required component of winning, but it is not exclusive to winning and vice versa.
Winning
is not exclusive to that.
You keep saying winning. What the hell does that mean?
Ernie, it's not about our country. It's political power. It's how the world works. When you play in politics, you must play all chips down to win and then sort it out at the end. You know, horse trading and no exchanging that for education. But like I said, education, what you do, is a necessary component of what I'm talking about. So that's where I'm unfortunately the odd man out, because
if you do not have
campaign or horse traders and you're an educator,
if you do not have the culture and the people behind to sustain whatever you won, it isn't going to last anyway.
Yeah.
Hey guys, I'm going to have to drop off, but hey, thanks for having me on.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.
All right. Yeah, he stayed a little bit extra because, you know, I guilted him. But the thing is, you know, we got like a minute left, and I'm going, you know, I'm so disinterested in collective political power that I don't see it as an asset. I don't see why it pales in significance with just a mood.
It really does. It's sort of like people watching. They think if they're in the stadium watching the game for the win, they think everybody in the whole world is in on the win. And there are some of us who never went to the stadium. We're not interested in the game.
Or if we did, it's because we like hot dogs or something. I mean, yeah. They don't even know why the motive. Hey, everybody's here. Why? I tell you, the Obama thing, when we were in New Hampshire during the big hoopla in 08, mm-hmm. January 08, there are all these Obama. The only thing that competed even a little bit with the Ron Paul people that were there by numbers, no matter what they tried to portray on TV, it was Obama people. And they weren't quite as many, but they had a good sizable crowd. And you go up there, why are you guys here? I tell you what it was. It's all the guys. This is where the women are.
Yeah, there you go.
they had no idea. They're like, hey, man, it's party, man. You know, it's college. They came and they said, and go here and we're here. Party.
Yep.
You know, where's the women? They had no philosophical understanding of anything. And then what happened? Obama's all about war. You know, this is, you know, heck, Obama's the best neocon they've ever had.
Well, you know, Jeff is all about trying to save the party, and he doesn't get not all of us care about the party's existence.
No, I mean, power, political power, got to save political power, get political power.
Well, I just love to tell him that the Republican Party has become a septic tank, and you can clean it out. But it's going to fill up with the same thing again.
It's still a septic tank with big, giant pipes going in. You know, every now and then you clean it out, but like you say.
Expand the pipes.
I'm with Deborah Robin now. You know, I really am sad that she's going through this, but I know she's doing her best to make this Paul Festival work, and I just don't want to die just, after we're going to get together, and then we'll have fun.